Well, boys, looks like you started the fun without me.
You're all sick. Every last one of you.
We're going to need a bigger gun.
What's the matter? You're scared of things that go boom, boom, boom.
Give me one goddamn reason why I shouldn't blow your goddamn brains all over that goddamn wall.
Live from the Church of Scientology in San Jose, California. My name is Eric, and I'm here with Michael.
Yeah, coming to you from the Church of the Hare Krishnas in Ocean View, Illinois.
Oh, yeah, that's where you're at. Fucking Ocean View, Illinois. We'll get all through that. I don't know. I never told you about this.
No.
If we're going to talk any Hare Krishna stuff today, maybe I'll get a chance to mention it. But my place in Cupertino is right next to the Church of Scientology.
Nice, the real one, the big one.
It's not the Hollywood one, oh. Right? Because that's hours and hours south. I know no one has any idea what California looks like on a map. People back home ask me how LA is all the time. It's like 6 hours from here or something.
I just didn't know how many churches of Scientology. I guess there's one in Chicago, so.
It's really, fuck it. We're going to just talk about it now. There's chapters. Skip over this. There's spoilers. This doesn't really have anything to do with the Muppet movie, which is the first movie. We're also going to be doing Follow That Bird.
That'll be second.
And there's still spoilers.
Yep.
And Mike Shaw, we're going to talk about too. That's going to happen. But I never told you about this. I'm right next to the Scientology Center. It's bizarre. I mean, I've never been over there because what I've heard of the center is that rebellious youths such as myself will go in there and fuck with the people from Scientology, which I already have little to no interest in, despite my counterculture nature.
Sprinkle thetans, yeah, and a little salt onto you and shrink your head.
You go. Scientology is the easy one. I actually don't like mocking Scientology because I feel like it allows. We're all pointing at the obvious stupid right. thing, and then Christianity just runs rampant and no one says anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to stick on that bandwagon and make fun of Jesus. But, you know, people will go in and they'll poke at the Scientology people.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, you're stupid. I read about your things on the internet. You know, whatever people do.
I've seen South Park.
And that's probably justified, but not really for me. But what I'm told is that that's probably a way bad idea. Because when you go in there and you pretend you're interested, they get all of your personal information and then they never fucking leave you alone ever in your life. It's impossible to shake them. So I haven't been in there. I'm interested, but I'm not going to do it. What I'll tell you though is there's people outside protesting all the fucking time.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a stand next door, a food truck or something that sells anonymous masks, and it's just right next to the center.
Right.
Mike Shaw is from Alternative Cut Productions.
Mm-hmm.
It's a video production place in the Chicagoland area, and he's got a site. It's at alternativecut.com. If you're in Chicago and you need somebody to cut something together, I think Mike Shaw could probably be hired. I was going to say could probably be bribed, but I think when you have a service and you offer it for money and then people give you the money, you do the service, I don't think that's a bribe. I think that's a job is what that's called.
It's prostitution. Yeah, oh, right. Sorry.
No, that's if you would give it away for free, but it's illegal if you sell it. That's what that is.
Oh.
All right, so have we upset everybody who listens to the show yet? Is it time to actually talk about the films?
I think, once everybody's pissed off, you can slide into the Muppet movie.
Great, we've bulldozed the credit card companies. We're all starting from zero. Bring me back to 1979.
So the Muppet movie came out in the late 70s. This is already after the Muppet Show,
mm-hmm.
if you're familiar, which was a cute little variety thing going on.
Sure.
And Jim Henson, we've already talked about, we did Dark Crystal and Mirror Mask, and he's done, he's the guy that comes to mind when you think of plush puppeties.
Sure.
The inventor of Kermit the Frog and the entire Muppet, that he's the name behind the Muppet franchise, which is probably, as far as I'm concerned, an undying image in at least American society.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone for the rest of time will recognize Kermit the Frog and Miss Piggy, as well as they'll recognize Homer Simpson.
Sure.
As well as they'll recognize goddamn Cinderella.
Yeah.
These are staples now in American society. But I don't think Kermit the Frog falls in with Cinderella as much as he falls in with somebody like Homer Simpson.
Sure.
Where back then, the Muppets wasn't necessarily supposed to be family-friendly entertainment the way Teletubbies ended up.
Sure.
You know what it is Sesame Street was that. Sesame Street was family puppets.
Yeah.
The Muppets was, I don't want to say it was subversive because they weren't fucking doing weird.
It's not
weird.
Meet the Feebles?
Right.
Is that what you're getting
That's
at?
That's what I was actually going to say.
Yeah.
But they were, I mean, they're grown-up characters.
Yeah.
They're not necessarily adult themed.
They're likable.
Right.
But they're, yeah.
They're like a group of nice people.
Yeah.
As opposed to somebody like Big Bird, who's infantilism is the appeal for the character.
Sure.
Which we won't get into in this film.
Sure.
But you rightly so were mentioning Frank Oz to me when we were opening.
Oh yeah.
Getting all the notes and stuff together. And I think you're absolutely right in saying that this is a good place to talk a little bit about Frank Oz.
Yeah, we've mentioned Jim Henson a lot, and the Muppets is a perfect example, as is Follow That Bird, of movies where I want to try and learn more about these things just by watching the movies. Something we're always trying to do here, just learn about, especially as we get busier, we don't even have time to try it other ways, but learn about things through watching the things, see what everybody's talking about. And under your advisement, I'd seen the new, newer, I guess, Muppets film, not the Ricky Gervais Muppets film, but
right.
Oh my God, will that be a day on our show? Let's start compiling that for a list of reasons we need a year 7. And then I became very interested in this piece of culture that I don't know about.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing the Muppets from 1979 and trying to go, you know, I think because of the era, there's slight differences.
Sure.
For the most part, I think I'm surprised by how timeless the Muppets right. are as an entity.
Absolutely.
But a lot of the characters that don't necessarily make a lot of sense today,
right.
you see coming out of the 60s and 70s.
Yeah, that's the one thing that I give so much credit to anybody involved with the perpetuation of the Muppets over the last 30 years, is their dedication to them as people. The Muppets are, for better or worse, once a character is introduced as a Muppet, capital M Muppet, they're going to be a Muppet
right.
for the remainder of their existence. People will hate certain characters. I know Pepe the Prawn in Muppets in Space was one of the least liked Muppets of all time.
Sure.
Still has a cameo in The Muppets, the new one. I mean, if you want to take somebody who's timelessness is probably warped so bizarrely over the entire run of the Muppets, you have to look at the band.
Yeah, definitely. Well, you see the 70s iteration of them, and that's...
Exactly.
Yeah, I want to talk about the band. Before I forget about Frank Oz, and we do the thing we always do with Frank Oz, where we go, this guy's important. Hey, Jim Henson. Hey, Muppets.
Right.
It's a weird thing. It's so excitable to talk about all the creativity behind this and these characters. So part of seeing this as a film from the late 70s was being able to look at it and kind of see the crossover between puppets and between practical effects. Frank Oz was the director of the 86 version of The Little Shop of Horrors.
Sure.
A movie that we had done the, you know, the original version of on our show. And he also co-directed, I think, The Dark Crystal.
Mm-hmm.
We talked at length about that movie, but not a lot about Frank Oz. So he's somebody, I mean, I really only know his work. He's not necessarily on camera, but he is doing the puppeteering for a lot of these guys and was surprised to find the voices as well. Frank Oz is both Fozzie and Miss Piggy.
There you go.
That's a real thing. You know, that's pretty astonishing to me. And so they are breathing life into these characters. It brings us back around to that conversation I was interested in about branding and about respecting the characters over time.
Mm-hmm.
But you start with the creation of these things and go, yeah, they know how the characters move and they know the voices too.
Mm-hmm.
They really did create these. And that is, it's very important. it's something that I think could be easily overlooked, but it's not as simple as have the character move however and then just throw a voice in there.
Right.
They are creating these types of personas.
Yeah.
And you'll notice that, I mean, the Muppets do not all move in the same manner.
Nope.
They're not all created the same way. They have their own distinctive kind of strides and movements that aren't quite signatures.
Sure.
But, you know, if you were to replace the puppet in Frank's hands between Fozzie and Miss Piggy, you would certainly notice the movements.
Yeah.
You would, if you were to give a generic puppet to Frank Oz and say, do Miss Piggy, now do Fozzie, even without the voices, I think you would notice between the ways they move that they are very different. But Frank Oz also did Yoda. I mean, he was the voice of Yoda, you know, and I believe did the puppeteering originally as well. And we'll get into Sesame Street, Grover and Cookie Monster and Bert.
Mm-hmm.
So he has a huge play. Jim Henson always gets all the credit, and rightfully so for a lot of the credit he's due. But there's lesser known names like Frank Oz that I didn't want us to slide right past.
Right. Well, and there's also greater known names than Frank Oz littered throughout the Muppet movie.
Oh, yeah.
Because it was a variety show when it was on television.
Mm-hmm.
The Muppets became synonymous with these big celebrities doing little bit parts and kind of playing up their characters and being a little bit more like the stereotypical ideas of those people. I think back to Mel Brooks' character in the Muppet movie.
Yeah.
Always being Mel Brooks, you know, we did Young Frankenstein on the show.
Sure.
But Mel Brooks always plays up his Yiddish characters. I think of Yogurt in Spaceballs.
Uh-huh.
But he's always so erratic.
Mm-hmm.
To have him play a mad scientist is just, there's no shock. Oh my God, Mel Brooks is a mad scientist.
Well, there's a little shock in the German mad scientist.
Right, there is that.
You know what I mean?
There is that.
In the way only Mel Brooks perhaps could, you know, could get away with. It's like we were talking about on the FP. I think Mel Brooks came up on there. We were talking about there being no black people in the FP.
Right.
And how Mel Brooks had worked with Richard Pryor and stuff, who also shows up in here.
Sure.
Has a great part
in
here. But you have Mel Brooks doing the borderline Nazi doctor.
Right.
I mean, that's the thing we're not saying, right? It's kind of the Nazi doctor.
Sure.
And it becomes immediately okay because it's Mel Brooks.
Right.
An idea that Mel Brooks himself used in his own movies.
And Mel Brooks isn't even neither the biggest name nor the most menial role by any means.
Sure, sure.
If you wanna take one of the more double feature, like oddly double feature centric things, there's the scene in the bar where Madeline Kahn is at the bar. And Telly Savalas is on the other side of, I think it's Fozzie. And then Carol Kane shows up. Carol Kane is actually credited in the film as Myth.
Yeah.
And she shows up again later.
I wish every time we shouted Myth here, Carol Kane showed up. That'd be great.
Well, we don't have the power of the Muppets. We don't have...
That's it.
We don't have the ability to convince somebody with the star power of Richard Pryor or, I don't know, Orson Welles, say.
Well, yeah, that's the thing is Orson Welles never gave us the go-ahead on this show. I think that's why.
Sure.
Yeah, we did it under his radar.
These roles, I mean, I have a hard time believing they even got paid.
I know, isn't that crazy?
Because it's got to be fun acting across from this band of Muppets because they're people. I mean, I've seen interviews with Kermit the Frog, not with Jim Henson.
Right.
You know, he's as much a star in Hollywood as anybody, I believe, literally has a star on the Walk of Fame.
Sure.
And
to have done that through so many decades, even after Jim Henson, that's a very delicate thing to go. The guys who created the Muppets, I feel like with each further decade, and maybe I'm wrong. I mean, I don't know the production behind it, but I feel like if for no other reason than time itself, they're going to be less and less involved.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to preserve who the Muppets really are, what those characters really mean.
Sure.
How do they morph? It's kind of the superhero thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
How do you take a World War II superhero and make him relevant today?
Right.
But have him still be the same? And superheroes struggle with that all the time, that reinvention.
Sure.
but for the Muppets to come from this place in what, the mid-50s?
Right.
You know what I mean? That's nuts. And then have them still be these guarded, careful things, something Disney's become very good at.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the idea of who is Mickey Mouse? Where do we let Mickey Mouse out in the wild? You know, how do we represent him when he comes out?
Sure.
The last character to be represented in all these different, I think about Kingdom Hearts, you know, mm-hmm. I think about new medium, let's put Disney characters in it. Pixar has a bunch of Disney cameos, don't touch the mouse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're trying to preserve our brands. And the Muppets are, because it's done so well, I don't think people think about how well preserved they are.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems like they are people. They've just been around this long.
Right.
But they should be identified as a brand that's been very carefully preserved, that's been very well treated over the decades.
I think that it's two components that have made the Muppets work for this long. And I think one, the most obvious one, is loving the Muppets.
Sure.
And I think Jason Segel was the perfect example of, I don't know if you've ever seen Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
Mm-mm.
But he actually has a thing in there. It's a vampire puppet opera.
Sure.
That he actually wrote and created himself and then put in the film as kind of a joke.
Right.
And extrapolated from that the idea for the Muppets, the film.
Yeah.
Because he loves it and it's just an inspiration to him. And it's something you need an attachment to them to really be able to write for them. You know, you have to write for the characters because unlike actors, they, as much as in ways they can't bring themselves to the table if the writing isn't correct.
Sure.
And I think that's the other thing, is the sense of humor that the Muppets franchise has maintained will never go out of style, because it's never topical. It's never political. It's never super highbrow. But at the same time, it's just a bunch of gags. And I mean, most of what I think of when I think of the Muppets is somebody making a really bad joke and you sit there and go, that wasn't funny, the Muppets. But then Kermit will turn and look at the camera and say, I can't believe he said that.
Right.
And suddenly you're in on the joke and it's really funny.
Yeah.
It's the idea of breaking the fourth wall and you being there with them. And
well, that was the Krishna thing too, right?
Right.
They make these Krishna jokes, which could be very political and very timely. I don't know about political, but the what's the official name? The International Society for Krishna Consciousness or something?
Right.
You know, it was a big fad at the time. It would have looked extremely dated. In fact, the first time it does, I go, wow, Hare Krishna, I haven't even heard that for a long fucking time. But then he makes the joke later about, oh, so this is going to be a reoccurring gag, huh?
Yeah.
You know, that's a timeless thing. There's a lot of fourth wall kind of break. They're watching the movie in a theater of the Muppets movie.
Right.
They bring out the screenplay as a prop, as a plot point element, you know, in the movie. So there are definitely things that are, they are themselves timeless devices.
Yeah.
And, you know, I wonder how much thought they put into that, or if it just kind of worked out that way the first couple times they did it. Do you think, I mean, did they go in this going, the Muppets will be timeless, and therefore the movie must be timeless? How much consideration do you think they give to that?
It had already been almost 20 years. I think they were pretty sure the Muppets were going to be timeless. And
can you imagine us in the 20th year of this show, though? We're not going to be thinking about timeless, are we?
I don't know what we're going to be thinking about in the 20th year of this show.
How to get me out of the mental institute for a weekend so I can record.
Yeah.
That's what we're going to be thinking about.
We're going to be teaching our Zune overlords how to download MP3s.
Right.
But I don't think timelessness ever was a concern for the creators of the Muppets. I think genuineness is always at the forefront of creating anything that has to do with them.
Mm-hmm.
The Muppet movie specifically, you have stuff built into the Muppet, the songs, right?
Yeah.
Something like putting a musical element to these Muppet movies, first of all, it bridges a gap between cinema and television.
Right.
Musicals didn't exist on TV. They just don't. This obviously is before So You Think You Can Sing or Singing with the Stars or American Dance Pop Idol. But in the theater, in the cinema, you can sing and dance and you get to watch, you know, this musical group, because the variety show is already has a heavy musical bent. That's why there's a band and that's why Rolf is even a character.
Right, right.
But to put it on the big screen, you get the big musical flourishes and you get to have them act out their songs.
Yeah, but see, that's another thing that is crazy for me, that the music is timeless too.
Mm-hmm.
That's what makes me think you got to be thinking about this a little. Because if there's anything that it is easy to not make timeless, it's music. You do what you're into at the moment, you know, what you're feeling.
You'd think so, but you have to take 1979, Eric. Okay, so let's take two things. 1979, that's probably within a 3-year ballpark of Whip It by Devo.
Okay, sure.
Equally timeless as The Rainbow Connection by Kermit the Frog.
Yeah, all right.
Do you think either group had the same mentality when writing their music?
No.
No. Music is only timeless because of, I go back to genuineness. It goes back to being earnest and striking a chord with your audience. And I think that the Muppets knows their audience.
Right.
The same as Devo, I'm sure, knew their audience.
Freedom of Choice was from 1980, I think. Don't quote me on that. Also, don't ask me why I know that. But it's a good point. I mean, I think maybe that's just the place they come from. It's the things that are valuable to them.
Mm-hmm.
It almost seems like if you were the sort of person who doesn't consider timelessness and you were tasked with creating a piece that is timeless, it would be very, very difficult,
mm-hmm.
especially in writing the music. You have to try and project where musical trends are going to go, or I don't know. I mean, there's a lot to it. The music does kind of sound a little, it certainly sounds more like the late 70s,
sure.
than the film looks like, mm-hmm. the late 70s. But I guess if you just come from a place where timelessness is a byproduct of the things you already value, it's a lot more natural. I mean, I joked about us and Double Feature being timeless, but that's something we think about a lot, actually.
Sure.
It's something where we're trying not to, you know, do anything that's current topics. Current news topics, or if we are, they're
mm-hmm.
very much a part of the discussion we're having. We're thinking, is anyone ever going to need to listen to a conversation about the Muppets and Follow That Bird? It's one of the reasons we don't do movies that just came out, unless we're pretty sure we either really want to see them or that there's something really interesting in them, for fear of, you know, doing some movie of the week thing that no one is interested in 5 years from now that has no cultural relevance.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to start talking about the Sesame Street film by considering the differences between the Muppets and between the puppets from
mm-hmm.
Sesame Street.
Sure.
Because when you came up with this idea for these two on the show, I had to kind of think in my head, I mean, like I said, my only background on this has been, I didn't grow up with it. You know,
mm-hmm.
I saw the movie. You said, you should see the Muppets,
mm-hmm.
The 2011 one or whatever, and I saw it. And that was it. And I kind of thought, okay, well, the only way I can even remember which one is Sesame Street and which one is the Muppets is by
Big Bird.
Well, I couldn't have even told you
sure.
which one was Big Bird before you said Follow That Bird. When you first said this, you know, I'm thinking, is that two Muppets movies? Or I'm going, okay, yeah, Sesame Street, different property. Sesame Street is a really interesting one for me because I watched this movie and I have to admit to you looking up a bunch of Sesame Street stuff
mm-hmm.
afterwards.
Sure.
Because I was kind of fascinated with the different treatment using some of the same general feelings.
Sure.
The same mechanics with the puppets.
Right.
And Sesame Street, I found, is something that was created in the late 60s with an aim to co-opt television for education.
Right.
So it was still Jim Henson doing it,
mm-hmm.
but it sounds more, and again, I have no idea. I'm just learning this for the first time. What do I know? But it sounds more like people came up with this idea. How do we use television, you know, to speak to
right.
children? Instead
mm-hmm.
of going, television is evil, they go, no, television is a medium.
Right.
Let's use the power of television, harness it for our own nefarious purposes.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go to Jim Henson and create
sure.
Sesame Street as a result of that. So you're right. Yeah, I think where you had kind of a variety hour before,
mm-hmm.
it was more geared generally. Sesame Street seems to have a hypothesis to it.
Sure.
It has a, you know, a running theory going.
the thing about Sesame Street, before we kind of stick to Follow That Bird, is that Sesame Street, as far as timelessness goes, has a far more difficult addendum to the idea of being iconic and lovable, because times are changing and you need to still be teaching kids and being educational.
Sure.
In the same, it's the same world, but 1960s children are not the same as
sure,
you know,
sure,
the 2K10 brood.
Well, and learning is science, and science evolves, right?
Exactly.
I mean, science is ever changing as we get new information. So yeah, you're right. There's a huge challenge there.
But Sesame Street has been so flawless in the way they do it. You always think of Sesame Street and you think of the simple stuff. One of these things is not like the other.
Mm-hmm.
The people saying words.
Sure.
You know, that kind of stuff. It's just all very brought to you by the number, brought to you by the color, brought to you by the letter,
right?
That kind of thing. But the other things that Sesame Street does that I would argue, Eric, is more subversive than the Muppets ever really managed to do. And it's not to do it to be subversive, but Sesame Street is so focused on integration and the idea that all people are the same and that everybody is a human being and lovable. And there's no reason that people can't live together. That's why there's the massive racial, you know, mixing that goes on Sesame Street.
Yeah,
that everybody was so pissed off about that way back.
Right.
So you just have this show that's for children, which is, this is the most subversive thing you can do, right? Get to the children.
Yeah.
Tell the children racism is bullshit. Tell the children they should be eating healthy.
Right.
Because you know what they're going to do? They're going to tell their parents.
Yeah. And they're also, I mean, the parents, I love, you know, the idea of teach the children. The opposite side of that, and perhaps the more evil side, is we're giving up on the old people. Fuck them. They're going to be out of here anyways. Lost cause.
Yep.
And that gives me, I mean, as an atheist, as a fucking science enthusiast, as someone who revises their opinion given new evidence and then sees the political hurdles of that.
Mm-hmm.
If I could describe my politics in any way, I know I use the word libertarian all the time,
mm-hmm.
but I think ultimately what it is that I like to see politics not be a hurdle to things like, hey, we've got new information. But because of politics, we're going to keep it the way it is. You know, mm-hmm. I hate that. That's at the core of my beliefs. And there's an idea that constantly gives me just a warm, pleasant feeling that, you know what, maybe gay people don't have as many rights as they should, but that's because of old people and they're going to die soon. So mm-hmm. it's all going to be okay.
Right.
And you're right, getting to the children, that is the most subversive part. Watching these two movies,
mm-hmm.
I had no idea Follow That Bird was going to be
the political the heavy one, right? One. Yeah, one with all the stuff to say.
Totally.
I mean,
totally.
You get into the movie, and I know you were talking about tribalism,
mm-hmm.
but the movie, just right off the bat, it's a group of people going, he's not a bird, he should be with birds.
Right.
I mean, I'm sitting there watching it. Remember, I used to watch this film all the time as a kid.
Oh, cool.
And I don't remember as a kid thinking, that's bad, you guys are bad.
Sure.
I just remember thinking, okay, I guess he's supposed to be with birds. You know, because the film,
right,
to a child, when you see a group of adults around a table, the decision they make is clearly the best one because they're grown-ups and
sure.
they always make the right choice.
Right.
And to see a decision that a board of grown-ups makes be the wrong one, and then the rest of the film go about trying to rectify a decision an adult has made,
yeah,
is just mind-blowing to a child.
Sure. Sure. But appealing, I think, as well.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, it empowers kids, which is what so many of these, I think every time we do a Robert Rodriguez children's film,
mm-hmm.
or especially when we did shorts at the very least. No, that wound up on the Spy Kids stuff too. Mm-hmm. We were talking about the children leading their own lives and not, you know, mm-hmm. living under what the adults tell them their adventure should be. Probably a large part of the reason that childhood adventure is a fucking thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's something very much your own. It's in your imagination. No one can guide it for you. I did warn you before the show that I kind of wanted to spend an unfair amount of time talking about tribalism.
Mm-hmm.
It's an idea invoked in such a simple, harmless way by Follow That Bird, but you can't help but think about it. And actually, in much the way maybe our show can Trojan horse a lot of ideas, to people who weren't really prepared or looking to talk about them. I think Follow That Bird did the same thing for me in tribalism.
Mm-hmm.
Because here I was in a relaxed, comfortable environment with friends. You know, that's what Follow That Bird's doing. And all of a sudden we start talking about a subject that I'm pretty sure if you had just asked me, I would have just known how I felt about.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of these friends you have, they're not birds like we are, that they might not understand you. I have a very easy intellectual response to tribalism, which is that I hate it and it's dumb.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know anything about where I come from or my heritage or even my immediate relatives. I'm not invested at all in what came before me. And I think I'm just stealing this from Penn Jillette, but I think he said something to the effect of nothing could be less interesting to him than the things you did before you were born.
Mm-hmm.
And I totally agree with that. And so tribalism, not interested to me. I also love his idea of destroying racism by just having sex with everyone all the time.
Mm-hmm.
If we all just have sex with all the races, we'll fix the racism problem. So I thought I knew how I felt about tribalism. But then this movie gets me thinking actually the opposite direction that it's even going, because they lighten it up. They're going, oh, they just want to be with other birds. And this is something interesting I've encountered. You know, I live in the valley, not in the city.
Mm-hmm.
San Francisco is an hour from here.
Mm-hmm.
The people who live in San Francisco, they're very diverse, but they look a lot like me and you. They're young, kind of weird. In the valley, everybody is in, you know, their 40s,
sure,
and married and has kids and mm-hmm. goes to bed at 5 p.m.
Right.
And I've spent a lot of time thinking while I was out here about, I want to be with my own kind.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mean 27, 28-year-old skinny white kids.
You don't mean white people. That's
yeah,
not what you
right.
mean.
Yeah. But I do think, you know, people my age is one thing.
Mm-hmm.
But even people who look weird the way I look weird, you know,
mm-hmm.
whatever that was called when I was in high school or whatever they fucking call it now.
Right.
I mean, nobody knows what it's called now in San Francisco.
Right.
I don't even know where to look for that particular sub-genre.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll do something mundane, like go to the mall out here and I'll see somebody with colored hair or a mohawk or tattoos. Tattoos and piercings is the big one.
Mm-hmm.
And in my head, I literally think,
friend,
you have tattoos and piercings. We need to be friends. Yeah,
sure.
Come over here. Where is your tribe? Bring me to your people.
Right.
Isn't that just the same kind of tribalism?
It is and it isn't. There's a difference between, this is very odd because I just picked up a bunch of nonfiction anthropology and sociology books that I've been going through.
Uh-huh.
So I have a lot of odd information about this subject.
Yeah, and I know this is way fucking off topic, but look, I apologize.
Oh, no, it's not.
And I,
it's not right. because you're presenting the counter argument to what the film is trying to teach children.
And I think the film is probably right.
Well,
I'm just curious why, as a forward-thinking human being, I still have this gut feeling.
There's one big factor that you have to consider. Big Bird is really happy on Sesame Street.
True.
Big Bird has found people that he identifies with. He likes these people. He cares about them. He trusts them. He feels safe around them. And this is a group of people that's saying, hey, just because you like them doesn't mean they're right for you.
Right.
And they're moving him to a place based entirely on the way that the people look. I mean, essentially their race, let's say.
Sure.
But in your scenario, there's two big factors. One, those people weren't born with tattoos. Those are the type of
sure.
person who would get tattoos, and generally,
that's true.
A person who would make the decision to have a mohawk and dye their hair pink is
right.
at least has, it's a symbol of their life outlook that you can already identify. It's the same as if you walked into a cafe and somebody was wearing another Rob Zombie t-shirt, right?
Right, sure.
That's different. If they were born with a Rob Zombie t-shirt,
right,
they might grow up and hate Rob Zombie.
Okay.
But to walk out the door with the shirt, it's, hey, this is something right off the bat you now know we have a common interest in.
Sure.
And if you know anything about this, there's probably a few other things that we can, you know, chew the fat over.
Yeah, okay. So these were decisions made after they were born.
Exactly.
Rather, before they were born.
So Big Bird is being thrown into a bunch of birds. Who, I mean, just because they're birds doesn't mean they get along. They're stupid and they do things he doesn't enjoy doing. If yeah. there were birds that also had lived on Sesame Street for 30 years, he would probably get along with them.
Sure.
It's not a matter of, I mean, this is, it's the basic idea, right? So here's the idea. All of your friends, let's say you have just an entirely black group of friends, but they all have tattoos, their hair is all, you know, they're all into alternative culture. They like hip hop and some of the more interesting
CMYK color scale.
Yeah. Perfect stuff like that. Right. And somebody goes, hey, you need to be around white people. And they just drop you off in, you know, rural Alabama.
Sure. I see what you're saying.
And they go, hey, so there's white people. And since they're white, y'all should get along.
You'll get along with them.
However, yeah, but now that's not to say that if they were to say, hey, you should be with white people, would you prefer to be with some alternative white kids in Chicago? They might drop you off here. And while you would miss your friends, you probably would be okay.
Yeah, right. Well, and that's the other thing. You get in this idea of America as a melting pot or what have you. And should you shrug off your heritage? Is it important to you? I still don't know how I feel. I mean, generally, things like heritage are strange to me, and maybe just because I don't have any of that in my life. But also, you learn a lot by being around people who have a similar background and who maybe grew up that way. So while I don't think that, you know, while I don't like that idea of tribalism and you have to go be with the other birds, I also don't fault people for it.
Sure.
If you're black and you have all black friends, I think you probably grew up in a similar America. You probably grew up with similar experiences.
I think you're dead on.
Hopefully those experiences become more and more diverse over time.
Right.
I mean, that's a place I think we're going as a society, but that's not that different from growing up with tattoos. You know, you both get in a crabby place and bitch about how you were in line at a Target and somebody asked you what you're going to look like when you're 80 with your dumb tattoo, and you told the old lady to fuck off and they kicked you out, and now you have to go to a different Target on the other side of the valley. I'm probably going on a little bit of a tangent here.
I think we've gone on a little bit of a tangent, but I think that going back to Sesame Street being about teaching children, I think that that's what that is, the core of the message of this film. There's a lot of humorous elements and ways to keep kids interested. One is to take Death Race 2000 and put Sesame Street characters in it, which they do flawlessly.
Road movies. Both of these movies are just road trip bonding films. They both have the sleaze thing going on, too.
Yeah, there's some sleaze.
Sleaze Brothers Fun Fair. I think the carny must be the longest running thread of our show.
Yeah.
We just can't fucking... I love they're going there and they're talking about how the games are rigged, and the carny is, you know, such a great place for a skeptical appeal because no one has any emotional investment in the games and everybody knows it has the reputation it's rigged. So they're literally just standing there going, did you weigh down the darts?
Yeah.
But this one, so this is the Sleaze Brothers Fair. What was the diner from the previous film?
El Sleazo?
Yeah, it's
great. I think it was El Sleazo, yeah.
Great.
But yeah, this film also employs musical elements. Again, I think in this film, first off, I would definitely argue that the songs may be a little less timeless, with the exception with the exception of the Waylon Jennings tune, which I think probably charted some country Billboard.
I don't know, man. I think starting on the seated national anthem in front of a giant flag is... Well, it's probably the most wrong thing since Mickey Rourke's patriotic ode to pussy.
Good.
But all right, maybe if not timeless, at least enjoyable.
Yeah, and I think that the film employs a lot of tactics to keep kids interested and also to not scare them, because the film has villainy.
Yeah.
There are bad guys.
Sure.
But I think that it's a really important move that the film never, and I swear to God, if there's one thing I think is wrong with the way people raise their children, and there's a thousand, but if there's one, stranger danger is the worst thing you can teach a child.
Sure.
And this film has hitchhiking. This film, you know, you live with three different families.
Sure.
You get help from anybody who's willing to lend a hand. I mean, the idea that human beings might actually be okay helping other human beings.
That most people are good.
People,
and not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The fact that you can get a ride from Waylon Jennings and he'll drop you off with a family and everybody knows all the songs you know, so you can just sing them together.
Sure.
Big Bird is in a wonderful situation throughout this film because he is, for all intents and purposes, Eric, fucking lost and homeless. He's a lost and homeless child. And you name me one time he's terrified or frightened.
Oh, never.
The worst is he gets sad.
Yeah.
Because he gets put in a sideshow.
Hides in a haystack.
And yeah. I mean,
seems to still have a blast.
Even the sideshow guys, they don't treat him poorly when he's at the carnival.
They're just exploiting him.
He's just bummed because he wants to go home.
Yeah, right. Right.
And kids can identify with that down to when they have to sleep over at a friend's house they don't really like.
Sure.
It's that feeling. Or they're on
a fucking road trip.
Yeah.
Want it to stop. They want to go home. Yeah.
I think that the film is just really, again, this goes back to our conversation about the Muppets, but it's attention to its audience. And I love what you said about Sesame Street just having an arcing hypothesis with everything it does.
Yeah.
I think that's so dead on. And sure. I think that this film, to come out when it did and to be making the points it's making, is such a strong tool for children and honestly for adults. Because you and I watched this film and analyzed it to the point that, I mean, a child wouldn't know they were doing it. And the film managed to take things that, like I mentioned before, the board meeting, that kids wouldn't identify as satirical or farcical or total bullshit.
Sure.
You and I watch it and we're pissed off. I'm as pissed off at this board meeting as I am the intro scroll to Gone with the Wind, where they're talking about how the wonderful land of the black man being a slave is gone. I'm just equally pissed off. So who the fuck are these guys talking about Big Bird?
Right. But they do it from a place of compassion, right? That's the other thing, is they're the villains. But they genuinely look at the Big Bird case file and they go, "Ah, poor guy, we gotta help him out."
Yeah. Well, even
and I think
even the Sleaze brothers eventually relent.
Yeah, we're planting seeds. Mm-hmm. We're keeping it simple and we're planting seeds. And Sesame Street has child programming. I mean, really, that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Down to a fucking science. And it's impressive. I watch it and I go, man, for everything I've learned about film, I still can't know 100% of what they're doing. I would need to learn just as much about, you know, child psychology, about learning development.
Last week, you talked a little bit about South Park, about their perfect methodology of looks like bullshit cartoon tackling massive social ideas.
Sure, sure.
I think Sesame Street has the same basic principles there.
Sure.
Seems like a bunch of dumb puppets goofing around, throwing pies.
Right.
Teaches an entire generation how to live from a place of equality and compassion.
Sure.
I think that's powerful.
Yeah, definitely. The people are really into skeptical activism and any kind of greater spread of challenging of religion or massive overlord ideas. Sesame Street is a really good example of... It's weird to talk about it as ever being controversial.
It feels like the inside man.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah, I look at Richard Dawkins and think a bunch of great ideas, and people give Richard Dawkins crap for you're not reaching out to people and this isn't the way to do it. And I think anybody not doing it like Sesame Street could be doing it better. We have a couple people who helped out on the show. You can learn about the show itself at doublefeatureshow.com. You can email us at doublefutureshow@gmail.com, and you can join us in thanking Flint Ironstag, Maxwell Harley. I almost have these memorized after doing them 1,000 times. What is it? Meta Somerville and Hannah Hughes, right?
This is no. Yes. Really? Well, okay. Yes.
They are the ones to thank for the glorious, glorious thing that's about to happen on our show.
I believe you're talking about next week's show?
Next week's huge, gigantic,
okay,
big show.
We're doing a Killapalooza. We're doing a Killapalooza that dwarfs Critters in its...
Palooziness, yeah.
In its paloozality. We are covering, ladies and gentlemen, George Romero's zombie saga. We're going to do Night of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead, Day of the Dead, Land of the Dead, Diary of the Dead, and finally Survival of the Dead.
Wow. Yeah.
Now, these are the Romero-directed films. We are not going to be doing, we're not going to be recapping Zack Snyder's Dawn.
Which we already did.
Right.
Already did.
We're not going to be any of the remakes of Night of the Living Dead, 3D, or any other amounts of Ds.
Right. Right.
We're not going to do the Day of the Dead remake.
We're not going to be doing Return of the Living Dead either.
But we are going to be doing 6 zombies.
Yeah.
Back to back to back to back to back to back. And ladies and gentlemen, for your listening pleasure, another Killapalooza is on its way. Watch more fucking film.
Bye.